हरि सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 45, chapter 85, canto 10. Sukadeva Goswami continued, seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, saintly Devaki was struck with wonder. O king, she concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, she considered their birth and coming from Sutala to have been produced by Krishna by Maya in order to cheat Kamsa. It was a show of his affection for her. They had entered Devaki as embryos with their previous bodies, but they did not come out of Devaki with those forms. After their death by Kamsa, they again assumed those Devata forms. This is understood from these verses. Sukadeva Goswami concluded, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Lord of unlimited valor, performed countless pastimes just as amazing as this one. O descendant of Bharata, Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Sukadeva summarizes the stories about Krishna in order to conclude the work quickly, fearing that Parikshit's departure time was at hand. The stories are infinite since simultaneously he reveals unlimited pastimes. This was witnessed by Narada, right? Because when Narada went to Krishna's houses, so that 16,108 palaces, Narada Muni went, he expanded also. So he went, because he wanted to know what he's doing at the same time, if he's doing all these pastimes. So if he goes one by one, he won't know. So he expands and goes into all 16,108 at the same time. And Krishna's there in all of them with his wives and family and friends, you know, and relatives, and doing all different things. Each one, there was not one that he was doing exactly the same thing. I mean, it will all be within the context of standard Grihastha life. But it'd be unlimited in that the varieties, you know, it's not that in one he was bungee diving off the roof, you know, like that, and another one they were out in the back, you know, with their, ATVs, you know, ripping up the back lawn, and, you know, the queen was yelling and screaming at them, you boys, you know. No, it wasn't like that. Those pastimes you get here. So, they were all unique and different and special in all their interactions and that between Krishna and the devotees. So, that's already been witnessed by Narada Muni. So it's unlimited. So he could go on unlimitedly describing, but the problem is there's not that much time. Right? So he has to finish the pastimes, then conclude, you know, with all the proper understandings and everything in 11th canto. The cause is that Krishna has unlimited powers because he is the source of all other forms. Right? Whatever he's unlimited powers, all these forms come from those powers. He's unlimited. His powers are unlimited. The forms are unlimited. Therefore, his pastimes are unlimited. Mm-hmm. Sri Sudha Goswami said, This pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe and serves as the transcendental ornament for his devotees' ears. Anyone who carefully hears or narrates this pastime, as recounted by the venerable son of Vyas, will be able to fix his mind in meditation on the Supreme Lord and attain to the all-auspicious kingdom of God. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. Seeing the brahmanas astonished on hearing that the sons attained Vaikuntha immediately, being merciful, Sutta states, what to speak of the Lord's brothers attain that goal. Others, by hearing about it, can attain the same goal, right? So they went through the pastime, they went back to Godhead. So if we simply hear about it, we can get the same result. Pleased with these words of Sukadeva, Sutta glorifies the activities of the Lord. Okay, the last one was Sukadeva. Okay, so that he concluded there, and then Sutta concluded the chapter after that. Pleased with these words of Sukadeva, Sutta glorifies the activities of the Lord, while also glorifying Sukadeva. One who hears constantly, Anu, without further, one who hears constantly, Anu, without further glorifying Sukadeva.
Qualification.
This is not working. This is. One who hears constantly anu without further qualification. Why without further glorifying Sukadeva? What does that mean? I can say, okay, without further glorification. He went on and described. No, it didn't make sense. Okay. One who hears constantly anu without further qualification, or who constantly narrates the pastimes of Krishna, attains the supreme abode. The reason for constant hearing is giving. The Lord has the sweetest fame, made of the highest blissful rasa, amrita kirtehi. Thus, his pastimes are also the sweetest. Thus, they cannot be given up. Or, one who hears methodically, anu, or one who hears methodically, anu. I guess maybe he's just making that point is another way of looking at it is anu. In other words, constantly, you're hearing about them constantly, you're hearing about them methodically, going through like this, you're not jumping around. Murari, the killer of Mura, is Swayam Bhagavan. Sukadeva described this story because Krishna was famous for killing Mura, the commander of Naraka's army. Or, there is special rasa in relating this story. Hearing it from the mouth of devotees gives it special taste. Pibantam tvan mukam boja chutam hari katamritam. I am drinking the nectar of topics about Krishna, which is flowing from your lotus mouth. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.13. The story destroys the suffering of samsara, composed of unlimited prarabdha and aprarabdha karmas, without discrimination. Right, so it'll destroy all of them, not that it'll only destroy certain ones, or only on Thursday afternoon, that on the other days it won't, and like that. No. The hearer or speaker can concentrate his mind on Krishna, and thus attain greatest happiness in this world. Right, so happiness is gained by being absorbed in Krishna. Right, these other things that we do are basically just to maintain ourselves so that we can do service to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So ashram is how we situate ourselves so we can serve Krishna, and varna is then how we maintain that position of ashram. Does that make sense? So all this is just to maintenance so that we can serve Krishna. That's the whole point. Conclusion. The philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous oneness with and difference from the Supreme Lord is confirmed everywhere in the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, in my impersonal form, I am spread all over the material energy. Everything is resting in me, but I am not there. Right? So, we see is that there's a concept that when he's spread everywhere, then this impersonal means it doesn't have any attributes. Right? So we see in the second canto that Sukadev Goswami gives a method for approaching and appreciating the impersonal, but so that one can see and relate to the concept of personal. Right? So we see that he gives, you know, the mountains are his, you know, how you say, his backbone, and the oceans are his waist, and, you know, the different planetary systems are different positions. The sun and the moon are his eyes, and, or, you know, his intelligence, his mind. Does that make sense? So the universal form is the impersonal manifestation of the Lord. Right? Because we're dealing with generic aspects. It's not specific. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's actual, the impersonal concept. And this idea that there's nothingness, that's actually not a philosophy. People make it up just like they make up that we'll be happy in the material world. So, that we can be happy in the material world is bogus. And that the Brahman is just, you know, the impersonal, formless nothingness like this, that's also just as bogus. Yeah? Does that make sense? In other words, it's just the impersonal aspect of Krishna's all his energies. They're all personal, but when you're dealing in the generic platform, that's called impersonal. And when it's then localized, then you call it personal. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's like that. We do that with everyone, everything. You know, we say cows. That's impersonal. This cow, or this particular group of cows here, that's personal. You understand? So, all it is you're dealing with the generic form, that's impersonal, and the specific form, that's personal.
Right. Then when you say something is nirguna or sabun, that is also generic and personal.
Yeah.
When you say something about nirguna and sabuna, then that nirguna is something generic and sabuna is something specific. Something personal.
Well, if you're talking about in this nirguna, saguna, but it depends also how you're applying it. Because nirguna can mean not material, saguna means with qualities. So Brahman is nirguna, means there's no material qualities, but it's saguna, it is made of the qualities. But it's generic, so it's impersonal. Mm-hmm. And Krishna is saguna with specific, you know, manifestation of those qualities. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So in other words, the impersonal is not as impersonal as we make the impersonal to be out to be. Does that make sense? So, in his impersonal form, he's spread all over. Right? Everything is resting in me. So the whole material creation is resting on Brahman. And Brahman is resting on Krishna. So that's why everything's resting in him, but he's still separate from that. Right? He is everything. Same time, it's resting on him, but he's separate. That is the Chintamani being, inconceivable. Simultaneous oneness of things. That's Krishna's position. This very statement is also given by Vasudeva. To say that the Lord is not present everywhere means that he is aloof from everything, although his energy is acting everywhere. This can be understood by a crude example. In a big establishment, the energy, or the organization of the supreme boss, is working in every nook and corner of the business. But that does not mean the original proprietor is present there. Does that make sense? So you can feel, you understand, he's actually there by the potency, but not him personally. Right? Although in every department the presence of the proprietor is felt by the workers, the physical presence of the proprietor in every department is a formality only. Actually, his energy is working everywhere. Similarly, the omnipresence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt in the action of his energies. Therefore, the philosophy of inconceivable simultaneous oneness with and difference from the Supreme Lord is confirmed everywhere. The Lord is one, but his energies are diverse. Right? Echad Elohim?
Yeah.
Okay.
The question might be asked,
not about this, but before, Gaudeva came her sons.
Okay.
Some may doubt how would those personalities be born of them. Why would they be born like this?
Well, why not? They have someone else they'd like to be born there?
Probably.
You know, like Elvis or something, or, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, but what's, what, my point is what does it matter? Why is it important?
Them.
Why not them?
No, because everything we apply to ourselves.
So right, because we're the center of the universe. Yes, okay.
Okay. And, you know, to be able to give birth to Krishna, you have to have a very elevated consciousness.
Right.
And we have those guys before.
But they are the sons of Marichi. So they're not just any old schmo. Right? And because of the curse, then they're going down like this. Because they've been cursed, then they have to be killed by their father. So as the sons of Kalinemi, they were killed. The next life, being born of Devaki, then Kamsa, who was Kalinemi, now, you know, he was their father last life, so this life, then he kills them. Then they end up with Bali Maharaj, right? Because it seems they just take that lineage. But then, now they come back, being brought by Krishna. Then they have that realization of who they are, and then they go back to Godhead. So then, what's the problem? They went back to Godhead. So if they have a problem with her giving birth to them, then just by drinking her breast milk, they went back to Godhead. Right? So that's pretty good. Pretty good. You know, so it's not like mother's breastfeeding the child, puts him down in the bed, turns around for something, comes back, and there they are standing with four arms and all that. Okay, thank you, see you later, I'm going back to Godhead. Right? You know, so, yeah. No? It would definitely make a splash on Facebook. Okay. So now, chapter 86. Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra, and Krishna blesses his devotees. Pratigya, worship of the devotees is the only way to worship the Lord. So it says, because when Krishna says, one who is my devotee is not my devotee, one is the devotee of my devotees, he's my devotee. Right? So that's the one. Chapter 86 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Purikit asked Sukadeva Goswami question 1042 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 1042, okay, from 1086.1. King Purikit said, O Brahmana, we would like to learn how Arjuna married Lord Balaram's and Lord Krishna's sister, who is my grandmother. Sukadeva Goswami answers in verses 2 to 12. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Arjuna kidnapped Subhadra and how Lord Krishna went to Mithila to bless his devotees Bahulasva and Shrutadeva. When King Parikit desired to learn about the marriage of his grandmother, Subhadra Devi, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, while touring on pilgrimage, Arjuna heard that Lord Balaram intended to give the hand of his sister Subhadra to Duryodhana in marriage. Wanting to kidnap Subhadra and marry her himself, Arjuna disguised himself as a renunciate and went to Dwarka. So effective was the disguise that neither Balaram nor any other resident of Dwarka recognized him. Rather, they all showed him the due respect due to a Vaishnava mendicant. In this way, the 4 months of the rainy season passed. One day, Arjuna received an invitation to dine at Lord Balaram's house. There he caught sight of Subhadra and was immediately overwhelmed with desire for her. Subhadra also desired to have Arjuna as her husband, and thus she glanced back at him shyly. A few days later, Subhadra left the palace to participate in a chariot festival. Taking this opportunity, Arjuna abducted Subhadra and defeated the Yadavas who tried to stop him. Lord Balaram was at first greatly angered to hear of this. But when Lord Sri Krishna and other family members pacified him, he became joyful and sent the bride and groom off with elaborate wedding gifts. There was a Brahmin devotee of Sri Krishna named Shrutadeva who lived in the city of Mithila. By the will of providence, he can earn only barely enough to keep himself and his family alive. Still, he was always satisfied and spent all his time executing his religious duties. King Bahulashtra was another great devotee of the Lord residing in Mithila, a member of the dynasty in which King Janaka had appeared. Bahulashtra ruled over the whole province of Videha, yet he remained as detached from material wealth as Shukadev. Pleased with the devotional attitude of both these great souls, Lord Krishna went on his chariots to Mithila to visit them, taking along Narad and several other learned sages. The people of Mithila greeted the Lord and his saintly entourage with great delight. Bearing various gifts for Krishna, they bowed down and offered obeisances to both him and the sages. Bahulashtra and Shukadev both stepped forward and respectfully requested Sri Krishna to visit their homes. To satisfy both of them, the Lord expanded himself and went to each of their homes simultaneously. They each worshipped him suitably, offered prayers, washed his feet, and then sprinkled themselves and all their family members with the wash water. Lord Krishna then praised the sages who were with him and glorified brahmanas in general. He also imparted instructions to his host concerning devotional service. Understanding these instructions, both Shukadev and Bahulashtra honored the sages and Lord Sri Krishna with single-minded devotion. Lord Krishna then returned to Dwarka. Mithila is... that's the one at the lower part of is that in Bihar, or that's the lower part of Nepal?
That's the lower part of Nepal.
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 Okay, so that's where Janaka Raj is.
Yes,
Janaka. Okay, so it's in that same line. So yes. Sita Devi and all that.
Yes. It was the north of Bihar, northeast of Bihar, and south of Nepal earlier, but now it is in Nepal.
In Nepal, okay. So before Videha was all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses 1 to 12, Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra, and 13 to 59, Krishna blesses his devotees. 1 to 12, Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra. King Parikit said, O Brahmana, we would like to learn how Arjuna married Lord Balaram's and Lord Krishna's sister, who is my grandmother. The BBT purport states, Parikit Maharaj turns now to the topic of the marriage of Lord Krishna's sister, Subhadra. In the opinion of Srila Sridhar Swami, King Parikit's question here follows from the previous narration because Arjuna's winning the hand of Subhadra was just as difficult a feat as Lord Krishna's retrieving the sons of Devaki from the realm of the dead, since Lord Balaram himself opposed Subhadra's marriage to Arjuna. Right, so he's pointing out is how amazing things are done, so also the devotees do amazing things because they're serving Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, seeing signs of the conclusion of the pastimes, right, because we saw from the last one just how he worded it and kind of sped it up. He didn't get into detail. You see, he just brought the thing and then brought it to a conclusion quite quickly. Right? So he's worried about the time. So seeing that, now then Parikit Maharaj then... Okay, so Parikit becomes frightened and asks questions so that the stories will continue. He asks about the marriage of his grandmother, in which Krishna was a major cause. Right, so Krishna did those that amazing things with Devaki's sons. Now also this is there. He had long desired to ask about this. I desire to know how the marriage took place. Since she was the sister of Krishna and Balaram, such a marriage would have been difficult to achieve. Arjuna's name, Vijaya, conquest, indicates that he was successful in attaining her. Parikit was anxious to hear this story because Subhadra was his grandmother. Shukadev Goswami said, while traveling far and wide, visiting various holy places of pilgrimage, Arjuna came to Prabhas, where he heard that Lord Balaram intended to give his maternal cousin Subhadra to Duryodhana in marriage, and that no one else approved of this plan. Arjuna wanted to marry her himself, so he disguised himself as a renunciate, complete with triple stab and went to Dwarka. Right? So this triple stabbing, you see, has always been there. That's the Vedic. The idea of the impersonalist with the single staff, that actually is not a Vedic thing. They've created that. You know, so if they actually want to be Vedic, then they have to use a triple staff. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Mayavadi sannyasis take one danda or one rod, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis take three dandas or three rods. The three rods or tridanda indicate that a Vaishnava sannyasi vows to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his body, mind, and words. The system of tridanda sannyas has been in existence for a long time, and the Vaishnava sannyasis are called tridandis, or sometimes tridandi swamis, or tridandi goswamis.
And the
sabana
danda that represents oneness with Brahman,
is there indication of oneness with Brahman? I'm not sure. I really don't know. But the point is that the tridandi is the standard. There is no, Vedas don't mention a single danda. There must be something, I'm not sure how, because Madhva uses one. How that comes about. I think his is Ekaina, means that one in purpose with the Lord. Mm-hmm. Those philosophies too. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, so, or if it is taking that there is such a thing, then they're just, you know, misappropriating it in their own way.
Save the trees.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, Varanasi is a little dry up there, so not so much bamboo. How they've been situated either here or in Kerala. Plenty of bamboo, but then Madhvacharya is in Kerala, so then why wouldn't he have used more bamboo? Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Balaram wanted to give Subhadra, his maternal cousin, to Duryodhana. Others did not approve of this. It was considered best if Arjuna married her, since she was a maternal cousin, and it would show respect for his friendship with Krishna. This is the custom in the south at present, and elsewhere as well. Balaram acted in this way in order that Krishna could have some exciting pastimes. Right? So Balaram arranged like this just so there'd be some exciting pastime. So everybody except Balaram is saying that she should marry Arjuna, right? Because at least the practice in the south on the maternal, the maternal cousin, then it's just a natural setup that they would get married. It's just taken as a given. Then if they decide not to, then that's another thing. But it's just a given when they're born, they'll get married. You know, if it's appropriate age and everything like that.
This is pretty awesome.
Sorry?
Yes,
but that's what I said. Jiva Goswami is writing, you know, it is, this is the custom in the south at present, and elsewhere as well. So we see, you know, anywhere as part of the south, you generally see that. So that means basically from, you know, Dwarka on down. So then others are thinking this would be a better match, right? Arjuna and Subhadra, not Duryodhana. Sorry? Yeah, Duryodhana is not the match. They're not thinking that he's the man. So Balaram then, you know, took that opposing plea just to make a wonderful pastime. Like that. So that's the whole purpose behind it. Because we can see after it's effective, then he's very happy. Right? But, you know, so the pastime unfolds and all that, then desiring her, Arjuna disguised himself as a sannyasi in order to gain entrance to the palace. He appeared most respectable since he carried a tridanda, which indicated his philosophical views as a Vaishnava. So then he would be respected because they're all devotees. So if a Mayavadi showed up, then he probably wouldn't get the same respect. He'd deal properly, but he'll get more if he's a devotee. So means we're going to see is that how could this happen? Because Balaram is, you know, Vishnu Tattva. He wants something to happen. How could Arjuna then counter that by the will of Krishna. So that's the whole point, because Krishna's Maya is acting. Therefore, Balaram couldn't even understand that Arjuna was Arjuna. He just thought he was a visiting sannyasa. So it's only by Krishna. So that's why he said, so that Krishna can have some nice pastime.
Brahma Vimohan,
yeah. Balaram couldn't. He knew something was up, but he couldn't tell what. So that's the point. When Krishna wants to keep something even from Balaram, Balaram can't understand it. You can get an idea, but, you know, can't move it. The BBT purport states, Arjuna's plan for obtaining Subhadra as his wife may have seemed unconventional, but he was not acting without encouragement. In fact, Lord Krishna was his prime co-conspirator. And in Dwarka, most of the members of the royal family, especially Vasudeva, were unhappy about giving their favorite daughter to Duryodhana. Sukadeva Goswami continued. I wonder if they're using the term cousin here, meaning... Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. He stayed there during the monsoon months to fulfill his purpose. Lord Balaram and the other residents of the city, not recognizing him, offered him all honor and hospitality. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Sannyasis are generally meant to travel all over the country for preaching work. But during the 4 months of the rainy season in India, from July through October, they do not travel but take shelter in one place and remain there without moving. This non-movement of the sannyasi is called Chaturmasya Vrata. When a sannyasi stays in one place for these 4 months, the local inhabitants of that place take advantage of his presence to become spiritually advanced. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, he lived in Dwarka for the monsoon months, since the sannyasi should reside on one place during that time. Balaram did not recognize him by the will of Krishna. Otherwise, it would mean he was not omniscient. Right? So Balaram's omniscient. So he knows everything, but because it was the will of Krishna, he didn't know. Otherwise, the pastime wouldn't come out so special. Sukadeva Goswami continued. One day, Lord Balaram brought him to his home as his invited dinner guest. And Arjuna ate the food the Lord respectfully offered him. The BBT purport states, from the explanation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, it is understood that Arjuna, in his sannyas role, had finished the 4 month vows of the rainy season and could now again accept general invitations from householders. Thus, no one would have suspected any unusual motive in his visiting Lord Balaram at this time. Sukadeva Goswami continued. There he saw the wonderful maiden Subhadra, who was enchanting to heroes. His eyes opened wide with delight, and his mind became agitated and absorbed in thoughts of her. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, Mahatim means she was mature. She was attractive to heroes. Another version has Dhira instead of Vira. She was attractive even to persons who were in control of their passions, such as Arjuna. He became absorbed in thinking of her. So either way, either as Vira or Dhira, that she is attractive. Right? So in other words, the qualities are so nice that she's attractive. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. The Vedic concept, it's about the good qualities of the girl that is the attractive feature. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Arjuna was very attractive to women, and as soon as Subhadra saw him, she wanted to have him as her husband. Smiling bashfully with sidelong glances, she fixed her heart and eyes upon him. The BBT purport states, as soon as she saw him, Subhadra knew that Arjuna was no sannyasi, but rather her destined consort. Right? Because otherwise the sannyasi is not going to respond in that way. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada elaborates, Arjuna, the grandfather of Maharaj Parikit, was himself extraordinarily beautiful, and his bodily structure was very attractive to Subhadra. Subhadra also decided within her mind that she would accept only Arjuna as her husband. As a simple girl, she was smiling with great pleasure, looking at Arjuna.
What is this simple girl?
Simple means that they're not... She's not from Paris. So, she's happy, then it's there. It maybe has that shyness, that femininity and all that, but it's there. It means the emotions are able to flow. So you don't have... you don't have so much skepticism and, I'd say, all these other things that are there that you can't really tell what's going on. She's developed naturally, so therefore the feminine qualities will follow their natural flow, rather than one and then something else is going on simultaneously, so it's harder to tell. Doesn't mean she's not sophisticated and refined and cultured. It just means simple in that the moods move in a very natural way.
And another question regarding that they were attracted by her good qualities.
Yes.
How would they see them?
How would they?
How could they perceive them, those that didn't associate with her?
You can see by the mood and all that. That's where you see. That's actually where the beauty lies, is in that mood. So the idea that it's simply in the physical, which is like the present day kind of thing, then doesn't really work. So only when the girl is putting out some energy that she wants to be attractive, then she'll look attractive. But when she doesn't want to look attractive, or she's not thinking about it, she doesn't look attractive. But when you're dealing with good qualities, then... when you're dealing with good qualities, then one has that natural attractiveness at all times. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different approach. It's the mode of goodness approach as opposed to the passion of ignorance.
And also, being from the kingly families, like, their qualities are always discussed among the public also.
Okay, yeah, that's also good. Means if we take from Mahabharata, then... Prabhu is saying that, you know, because you're dealing with the royal families, then everybody would know the qualities and have heard the qualities and we discuss all these things. So even if they haven't seen, they've heard the stories and other things. So, but in Mahabharata, when Arjuna was in the Duryodhana school, not Duryodhana, it's Dronacharya school, and they used to then spend time, so they became friends there. So then whenever they would come and visit, like you see is that Krishna came, remember, with Satyaki before and that, and they came to Hastinapur and that, and spent time with them. So then, at some point in there, then Satyaki, because he lives there in Dwarka, he brought up and was discussing about Subhadra. So at that time, Arjuna was interested. Then, when he's traveling around in pilgrimage, then he comes to Dwarka, but he hasn't entered. And Krishna, I think, comes out to visit him. Right? So this is when this whole plan is made. Because if he walks into Dwarka, then they'll all know Arjuna's here. Then what happened to Arjuna, this and that, and then who's the same, you know, there would be too much talk. So Arjuna met him outside, and then they made the plan. So that he would be, you know, dress up as sannyasi, he would go in, he'd be this, and Balaram would invite him to the place, and all these different things. And so then, you know, so then that came up. So by Krishna's, Yoga Maya, then Balaram didn't know. So you can have another one, is that one with Ghatotkacha. You know, playing the part of, I think. I never remember the name.
Shashireka.
Huh?
Shashireka, daughter of Balaram.
Shashireka? Daughter?
Shashireka.
Huh?
Shashireka.
Shashi?
Reka.
Reka. Daughter of Balaram. Oh, okay. She was going to marry the son of Duryodhana. like that. And so he took her form, and Balaram didn't know. Right? So, like this, it's a very famous story. So the same principle. Then, at the end, just before this part of the pastime we're hearing now, about this dinner. Because otherwise, I think Prabhupada's talked about it before, that she has, at least in Mahabharata, that I think he was hosted at Balaram's place. So he would be there, but it wouldn't be in the main place. It would be, you know, wherever the guests or the sannyasin would stay. But Subhadra, you know, knew that the sannyasin was there and had seen and everything like that. And so then Krishna asked her, so what does she think of this marriage with Duryodhana? And she makes a, you know, a face, right? And then he says, well, you know, so you don't interested in him. How about someone like Arjuna? Then I was like, okay, now we're talking. So then says, oh, so you'd be interested to marry Arjuna? Says, of course. But then, but she's going to go. I mean, her brother's making this arrangement. She's fine. She'll go along with it. But when here's Arjuna, and they says, well, what happens if Arjuna is also interested to marry you? And she says, oh, really? Okay. You know, then? And what if I say he's in Dwarka? He says, what do you mean he's in Dwarka? Right? So because she herself, being Yoga Maya, if Arjuna was in Dwarka, she'd know it. But Krishna, by his influence in Maya, even she didn't know, and she's Yoga Maya, right? Right? So, like this, and so he mentioned the whole thing. There's, okay. He says, but there's one problem. Arjuna, and I think has worked out this idea of how he kidnapped her and everything like that. But he says he's not going to go through with it if she's not interested. So he has to know she's interested. So Subhadra says, don't worry. He'll know. So then this dinner took place, and then now he knows. Right? Yes. Okay, now we're all up to speed. So in other words, you've heard Mahabharata, you know all these details, and so this just gives them. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, he was attractive to all women, what to speak of her. Seeing him, she understood that he was not a sannyasi, but someone who should be her husband. She experienced this through previous impressions and by her intuitive skill. So in this pastime here, we see is that it appears she doesn't know, but she figures it out. But in the Mahabharata pastime, then she knows. But she didn't know for the whole 4 months. But in this one, it appears she doesn't see him for all this time. Maybe she's heard about him, but now he's been invited to dinner. Now she sees him. So in other words, it's such a nice pastime, then it goes on every time Krishna comes. And so there'll be always some little variety. Putting him in her eyes and heart, she desired him. She smiled out of joy and in a joking mood. She threw smiling side glances, but with shyness, since she was well trained by her family. Right? Because, you know, the shyness is the powerful quality. It's one of the main qualities. Because if you're not shy, then the problem comes is that then it becomes too obvious. So the shyness, then that's there. The shyness can just be because there's someone here, there's someone else there, they're not part of the family. So many things can be like that. But if she's showing that enthusiasm, you know it's not because she doesn't do that when the family's there. You know what I'm saying? Srila Sanatana Goswami explains. Having heard about him from others, now she saw him directly. She fell in love with him or desired him as her husband. The symptoms of love are described. She smiled out of love or knowing that he was Arjuna disguised as a sannyasi. Though dressed as a sannyasi, because his mind was agitated because, I guess, her.
He mind.
Because her mind was agitated with love for him, she understood that he was in disguise, right? Because otherwise, why would she, being Yoga Maya, why would she be interested in a sannyasi? Right? Because then that would be an impious thing. She's not impious. So that she is, then she knows he's not a sannyasi. Right? But that he's there and nobody else knows and she doesn't know, you know it must be by Krishna's arrangement. Otherwise, who else can do that? You could say Balaram could, but he also doesn't know. So it has to be Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami continued, meditating only on her and waiting for the opportunity to take her away, Arjuna had no peace. His heart trembled with passionate desire. Once, on the occasion of a great temple festival in honor of the Supreme Lord, Subhadra rode out of the fortress-like palace on a chariot. And at that time, the mighty Arjuna, chariot warrior Arjuna, took the opportunity to kidnap her. Subhadra's parents and Krishna had sanctioned this. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verse 9. This was a festival held after the Lord rises at the end of Chaturmasya. Right? So you have all this. So during the Chaturmasya, the residents, Dwarka also won't go out. Because it's muddy and this and that, so they don't go out. So now that Chaturmasya is over, now they go out for this festival. And they'll go out to the mainland. Right? And have the big festival on the mainland. Because that's going out, but not really going out. You know, they've gone out of the fortress onto the main, because they always go to that Raivata Parva. What's that? There's a mountain there. I think it's Raivata Parva. It's whatever, that's where their park is, and that's where the Dwarkavasis go. Vasudeva and Devaki approved of his taking her through Krishna's cleverness. After that, Krishna approved. Krishna approved of Balaram. Hold on, whatever. Krishna placed her on his chariot so she could give him the ingredients so he could... So Krishna placed her on his chariot so she could give him the ingredients within the chariot. This is understood from Adi Parva of Mahabharata. This would be difficult since they were amongst all the Yadu members. But he was the best of warriors, Maharata, since he was the dear friend of Krishna. So he kidnapped her in Krishna's chariot. So now whether he came riding on it, Mahabharata, he comes riding on the chariot. Here it appears that she came out riding on Krishna's chariot. But in any case, the two of them left on that chariot. Why that chariot? Right? It's important because that chariot has Krishna's horses. Those horses no other horses can catch. So if Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra in Krishna's chariot, then no one's going to catch him. And that's one of the points in Mahabharata why they should give up trying to defeat him, because they won't. Sukadev Goswami continued, standing on his chariot, Arjuna took up his bow and drove off the valiant fighters and palace guards who tried to block his way. As her relatives shouted in anger, he took Subhadra away just as lion takes his prey from the midst of lesser animals. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, with permission of the Lord, he had his chariot brought from Prabhas. Okay, so this is, okay, where he had hidden it. Okay, so this one he's using his. He threw into disarray the Yadus on chariots and their foot soldiers, while relatives loudly shouted, which he ignored. He took her away, because that's one of the aspects of the Rakshasa marriage. You can't really worry too much about what the relatives are saying. Because if you do, then it's not going to work out. All right, so there may be some kind of a fight. But he's, you know, doing it in a clever way, so it's all done. Or, though they shouted, he took her away. He was not afraid. He was like a lion who takes his share amidst enemies. Sukadeva Goswami continued, meaning that it wasn't even like it was really difficult fight or something like that. It's just like the lion goes in, all these smaller animals, he just takes and then goes. Right? So in the same way, Arjuna just comes in without any difficulty, he just takes everything. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when he heard of Subhadra's kidnapping, Lord Balaram became as disturbed as the ocean during the full moon. Right? Now that's big. You know, the whole ocean becoming disturbed. It's not just he became upset or something. It's like the whole ocean is disturbed. That's big. But Lord Krishna respectfully took hold of his feet and together with other family members pacified him by explaining the matter. Lord Balaram then happily sent the bride and groom very valuable wedding gifts consisting of elephants, chariots, horses, and male and female servants. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Lord Krishna was in favor of Arjuna. Therefore, along with other members of the family, he tried to pacify Balaram by falling at his feet and begging him to pardon Arjuna. Krishna convinced Lord Balaram that Subhadra was attached to Arjuna, and thus Balaram became pleased to know that she wanted Arjuna as her husband. The matter was settled, right? In other words, if he had been arranged that she's going to marry Duryodhana, maybe she had set her mind in that way, so now Arjuna comes and this, you know, this is improper. But then he's happy to hear that Subhadra wanted to marry Arjuna, so then everything's nice. The matter was settled, and to please the newly married couple, Lord Balaram arranged to send a dowry consisting of an abundance of riches, including elephants, chariots, horses, men servants, and maid servants. Okay. Yes. Verses 13-59. Krishna blesses his devotees. Sukadev Goswami continued. Right, so he sees he's keeping everything very tight because the time is very short, like that. So he doesn't, because otherwise the elaboration of this pastime, like all the others, can be huge. But remember, he has the 7 days, and that's all that is there. Otherwise, one pastime he could discuss for 7 days. Right? But yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued. There was a devotee of Krishna known as Shutadeva, who was a first-class brahmana, perfectly satisfied by rendering unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna. He was peaceful, learned, and free from sense gratification, living as a religious householder in the city of Mithila, within the kingdom of Videha. He managed to fulfill his obligations while maintaining himself with whatever sustenance easily came his way. Right, so he focuses mainly on all his duties as a Brahmin. And so to do those very nicely, that takes up much of your day. Right? It's just So then, whatever maintenance was there without great endeavor, that's how he maintained himself. So that means it's not going to be that much. Right? By the will of Providence, he obtained each day just what he needed for his maintenance and no more. So you get what. So in the living entities worried about. Well, what about the future? What about this? What about that? And all these things. That's why more is required. But actually, then, it's that providence, whatever you do, you're going to get. So that's why then you put in your position of doing your service and those aspects. And then you put in balance of that, your time for taking care, maintenance. Right? And then, if it's just how much, it'll always be there. Right? And if you say, no, but I tried that and nothing was there, that means nothing's supposed to be there. If you had been working really hard at that time, you still would have got nothing. There's plenty of people who work very hard and have nothing. Right? And other people who sit around doing nothing and they got unlimited. So does that make sense? Yeah, it's just the way it works. So one performs one's duties. So he's performing his brahminical duties. Through that, then he's maintained. Satisfied with this much, he properly executed his religious duties. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verse 15. He did what was favorable for the Lord. He obtained what was necessary by the Lord's arrangement. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. I maintain what the devotee has and supply what he lacks. Bhagavad Gita 9. So in other words, if things aren't working out, maybe it's stuff that we don't require. Right? You know, we may think we lack that, but we don't actually require it. Or we have more than we require, and suddenly it reduces down to that. The Krishna will always take care. You know, if we depend on him, he takes care. It doesn't mean we don't do our duties. Like you see, he's performing his brahminical duties. And then from those duties, whatever's required comes. That's how it works.
When such brahmanas require less maintenance.
They require less maintenance.
But is that the reason why then they are able to perform more of devotional service, because maintenance is less?
So, because they require less maintenance, are they able to therefore do more devotional service? And how are you defining requires less maintenance?
Because more facilities, then one is absorbed in maintaining that. But if one has very few things, then, for example, if the brahmacharin grows, the comparison is
going to be... Yeah, no, I understand that, but why does he have less stuff?
So that he can perform more. Is that the reason why they keep themselves...
Oh, so is that the reason they keep themselves with minimal stuff? Yeah. Yes, exactly. So the point is just what you actually require, that's how much they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get by with very simple. I mean, I was always, seriously impressed when I first came to India, how a tap coming out of the wall, you know, just regularly you turn the thing and the water comes out, you fill up the bucket and you close it and it stops running. That people could take a proper bath in that. Not with the bucket, without the bucket. I was impressed on how that was possible. But it's very possible. You know, and very comfortably works. And if you want to be luxurious, then you put a bucket there. You know, with the mug. And then, you know, a loader and that. Then it's like, it's really good. You know, you want to add a little chokey, you know, to sit on, you know. It's like, you know, it gets better and better.
It's a spa.
Huh? Yes, that's the whole spa, right? And then, yes, you bring your Ganga mug. And that's the whole thing. Yeah. You know, it's like, so in terms of this whole thing, we haven't even gotten to a shower yet. So, and actually, depending upon whose shower it is, the tap actually gives a better shower than most showers. Because most showers don't have enough water in the shower. So unless you have one of those monster rain showers, the tap actually gives more. I always remember in the Brahmacharya ashram, they have these funny little plastic things. I'd always go, and when I take a bath, take it off. It's a great tap. So much better. Yeah.
It wakes you up in the morning.
Yeah, but you get water, you know, otherwise it's sitting there and... It's like, you know, great. Yeah, so it's so simple. So that means that place where you have the ground slope, the drain and all that, the water goes off, that you wash clothes, you wash dishes, you do all those things, you can take a bath there. You actually don't require a whole separate bath facility. You know what I'm saying? So it can be done. So because of the advantage of more devotional service, the Brahmin then lives that simple lifestyle. And if that's all that comes, that's what he has. That's how it works. So in the Vedic system, one thing does so many things. On the modern, you have one place that does one thing, like Versailles, right? One room does one thing. Well, the Vedic is one room does so many things. Like here, we're having a class here. You can have seminars here. Kids can play here. You can do yajnas here. You know, you can do drama. You can do everything here. Does that make sense? So like that is that the ability to have less things and get as much, if not more, done is just part of the system. So then the Brahmin then chooses what's going to be, what by what he's getting naturally, then he chooses that environment and then that's what he functions in. Right? Someone has a particular lifestyle they want to live, then yes, okay, maybe they'll have to do less direct service and do more indirect and money and all those kind of things. But you can also simplify your lifestyle and then do. So depending upon yourself, so he having these brahminical qualifications, then he could live at that kind of method. Right? But now if someone needs more facility, then they have to work at what that facility to maintain them. So by having less, then you naturally don't, you can do more direct activities. Okay? Okay. Uta means certainly. He took his share. Upa na mati. And never was in lack. He was satisfied with that and performed his worship of the Lord. So the day went, he's satisfied with that. He's not in anxiety, what about tomorrow? Tomorrow when it comes, then we'll see how today went. Why won't tomorrow come? That makes sense? He's not lazy and not doing his duties. We're not talking about he doesn't make an endeavor. He's performing his duties. And because of performing his duties, then Krishna's taking care. Because that's how it works anyway. The whole system works because Krishna takes care. It's not because you have a job, that's why you have money. Money you're getting is from your previous karma. Like that. This is just, you want your money, you think, through a job I'll get my money. So therefore Krishna gives you your money through your job. But if you didn't have that job, you'd still get whatever you're supposed to get. It's just the way karma works.
How about devotees? They have the concept that...
How?
Devotees.
Right.
They have this particular concept that it is better to earn as much as possible, save it, and then leave the job and everything, and then perform full-time devotional service. So then,
means, if the devotees can't... It means, in other words, but how are they making that money? So that means you're making money to... retire early so you can be absorbed in full service. But how are they having that facility to do that? Why is that there? Just because they decided?
No. Because of Krishna's mercy.
Because otherwise, why is it that, let's say, what others would take a whole lifetime and still not get enough, they can do it in half a lifetime, or a third, or a quarter, whatever. Why can they do that? It's by Krishna's mercy. Right? So it's still by Krishna's arrangement. It's not that they're so smart and all that, and aren't we so clever and professional. Right? No, they are smart, clever, and professional. But the point is there's other professional people who don't do that, can't do that. And why would they even have the concept to retire and not keep making money until they die? Right? Then work out something with the relatives that they charge an entrance fee for the funeral so that, still he's making money. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Good idea.
Huh? Good idea. Yeah, I was just saying. Anyone does that?
No.
Not yet?
But this concept of retirement is slowly going away.
Retirement is going away.
Because they don't know what to do after getting retired.
Yeah, because they're supposed to become vanaprasthas, but not knowing that, then they just keep on going. They say consultants.
Yeah, consultants. That's how they work. As consultants.
As consultants. So they're doing what everybody else does, they're just doing it earlier. So it's just that Krishna's arranged, he's giving them for their facility. But then all the devotees can do that, or only the ones that can make that kind of money? Now, if they were really smart, they would make that kind of money and live in a real simple place with a real simple car. But they're not doing that, so there's still, it's a mix. It still has that. But the point is you're going to get what you get from, whatever you do. So for them, it works. But you can't say everybody can do that. Everybody in one sense can if they just make it simple and just what works, and that's all. Nice food and they're happy. Right? Some clothes, some medicine, what do you require? Okay. It doesn't matter where you are in Bombay, it's insane anyway, so, whether you're 2 hours away this way or 2 hours away that way, it doesn't matter. You can be right next to the place, but it'll take you 2 hours to get there in traffic. You can live way out, but then by the train you'll get in, and it'll be the same 2 hours. Right? Yeah. So it's just a matter of how you want to live. Sukadeva Goswami continued, similarly, free from false ego, was the ruler of that kingdom, my dear Parikit, a descendant of the Mithili dynasty named Bahulaspa. Both these devotees were very dear to Lord Achyuta. Pleased with both of them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead mounted his chariot, which Daruka had brought, and travel to Videha with a group of sages. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, being pleased with them, seeing that they were unable to come to him because of obligation to serve his deity, he went to see those two eager devotees himself, right? Because they were doing the worship, the deity, so they couldn't go out. So Krishna came to visit them. Seeing the sages tired through going on foot, he forcibly put them on his own chariot and rode with them to Mithila. Right, so the sages were with him. They were tired from so much walking. So he put them on the chariot, and then they all went. Surya Goswami continued. Among these sages were Narada, Vamanadeva, Atri, Krishna Dwaipayana, Vyas, Parasuram, Asita, Aruna, myself, Sukadeva, Priyaspati, Kanva, Maitreya, and Chavana. In every city and town the Lord passed along the way, O King, the people came forward to worship him with offerings of argya water in their hands, as if to worship the risen sun surrounded by planets. Right, so Krishna is the sun and all these sages are the planets. The men and women of Anarta, Danva, Kuru Jungala, Kanka, Matsya, Paschala, Kunti, Madhu, Kekaya, Koshala, Arna, and many other kingdoms drank with their eyes the nectarian beauty of Lord Krishna's lotus-like face, which was graced with generous smiles and affectionate glances. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, the people of Anarta and other places, all men and women, saw Krishna's lotus face with great attraction. The provinces are listed in order when traveling from Dwarka to Videha. Some in the list are neighboring states. He went out longing to some places, even though the places were far. So this was not as the crow flies here. He was going out that are neighboring, but he's also going to places where, you know, the devotees are and where he wanted to be, you know, interact with the devotees. So then it's not necessarily just took the shortest route. But we have to remember he's on his chariot with Daruta, so they'll make good time. If he could get from Dwarka, you know, over to this side of India just in one night, he's not going to have a problem. Don't worry that it's taking them forever. He went to other places to give them mercy, and to all the places he went, one after another, he gave them bliss. Right, so by his mercy, then they're appreciating, then that bliss is there. The next verse says that he finally arrived at Videha. This verse also mentions that he met the people of Vraja, Madhu. He did this by entering into the apricot pastimes there, since the residents had by that time disappeared. Remember when it was the killing of, Dantavakra. And then after that, then there was some demon that at Mathura. Huh? That was Dantavakra. Then who was that at Dwarka?
Shalva.
Yeah, Shalva at Dwarka. Then Dantavakra at Mathura. So he went there and killed him. While that, he went to Vrindavan. And there and spent, I think, 2 months or something with them. And after that, then the pastimes, the prakat pastimes, became apricot. So as far as, anyone else is concerned, Vrindavan, they've all left. Right, so now it'll just be whatever is there. Right? And so here he went to visit them by going through that. He went into the apricot pastimes. Like that, and then spent time, and then he moved on.
It is understood that the apricot pastime, Krishna is always present.
He's always present, but he can't go and visit also. The philosophy of inconceivably simultaneous oneness with and difference from the Supreme Lord is confirmed everywhere in the Vedas. That's why we heard that. Then. Sukadeva Goswami continued, simply by glancing at those who came to see him, Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the three worlds, delivered them from the blindness of materialism. As he thus endowed them with fearlessness and divine vision, He heard demigods and men singing his glories, which purify the entire universe and destroy all misfortune. Gradually he reached Videha. Okay, so here. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, "In this way they enjoyed celestial happiness, with open hearts, full of love and affection for the Lord. And when they saw the face of the Lord, it seemed to them that they were drinking nectar through their eyes. When they saw Krishna, all the ignorant misconceptions of their lives dissipated." Right, so that's the point, it became fearless, because fear is coming because of not having that relationship with the Lord. So if one becomes fearless, means one becomes established in one's relationship with the Lord. When the Lord passed through the various countries and the people came to visit him, simply by glancing over them, the Lord would bestow all good fortune upon them and liberate them from all kinds of ignorance. In some places, the demigods would join with the human beings, and their glorification of the Lord would cleanse all directions of all inauspicious things. In this way, Lord Krishna gradually reached the kingdom of Videha. So the demigods would even come down and be within the crowd so that they would get that glance of the Lord. And then their glorification would also purify. So, yeah. The BBT purport states, Srila Jiva Goswami raises the logical question of how the ordinary people among the path could even see the Lord, since not only were their eyes covered by ignorance, but the Lord's chariot was traveling faster than the wind. Right, so it's faster than wind, but gradually he reached there. Right, because he's going to all the different places and all that. So it means it takes time, because otherwise, faster than the wind, he could have just immediately gone there. He would have just been there, you know, in that short time. You know, generally we see is that the standard thing to give taste is they start out in the morning and they're there by evening. Doesn't matter how long it is. You know, even they're going Mathura to Vrindavan, they start in the morning, they're there in the evening. Right? You know, or, you know, an emergency, then overnight they're going. But you don't hear of more than that. So, therefore, that's gradual. Supplying the answer, Srila Jiva Goswami indicates that Lord Krishna's special glance of mercy empowered every one of them with the devotional purity required for entering into his association. Otherwise, he would have remained outside the scope of their power to see. As he himself states in instructions to Uddhava, Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya, I can be perceived only by devotion. Right? Because the mechanics are him, so how could we use mechanics, you know, ourselves, which are operated by Krishna, and think that by our operating them, then we can know Krishna? Because Krishna himself says he operates everything, but he's beyond that. Right? Everything's situated in Brahman. Brahman's situated in him, and he's beyond that. Otherwise, how is Brahman situated in him? Right. So it's only by devotion that he's seen, because he's not interested in the mechanics. Right? But that devotion is expressed, so we use mechanics. Right? So whatever aspect we use, then doing that with devotion, that's then what makes, that's how it's expressed, and that's what makes what we use value. But it's the devotion that interests Krishna. Right? And part of the devotion is of mechanics, then there's ones that he likes to use to express his affection for the devotee. So in other words, the mechanics are the medium that they're going to interact with. So Krishna has the situations and activities and results and all those relations that he prefers. Right? But they themselves don't attract him. It's that he prefers these for the expression of devotion, but on their own, it's not that he sits there and plays with a yo-yo or something. Does that make sense? Bhagavatam 11.14.21. By the grammatical rule of compound formation known as Ekasesha, the term sta, vikshana, vinasta, tamisra, drig, bhayaha, although in its primary sense inflected as a masculine noun, may be understood in this context as referring to both men and women. right? Because as we said in the Sanskrit, then when you use the masculine only, it means everybody. Unless you can see the context, it was just men. But if it's a crowd, and then, you know, you say all men could see him, it doesn't mean the men could see and the women couldn't. It means all people. You know, or the jiva. The jiva, he thinks he's the supreme. That means all jivas. It doesn't matter what form they're in. Like that. So the masculine is the generic form. Does that make sense? Sugade Goswami continued, hearing that Lord Achyuta had arrived, O King, the residents of the cities and villages of Videha joyfully came forth to receive him with offerings in their hands. As soon as the people saw Lord Uttamashloka, their faces and hearts blossomed with affection. Joining their palms above their heads, they bowed down to the Lord and to the sages accompanying him, whom they had previously only heard about. Both the king of Mithila and Shrutadev fell at the Lord's feet, each thinking that the spiritual master of the universe had come there just to show him mercy. So each one thought that Krishna had come just to see them. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Thinking that the guru of the universe, worshipped by Brahma and others, had come, praptam, to give mercy, along with the sages, some, the two fell at the feet of their own Lord, or he who was able to fulfill all their desires, Prabhu. The best Brahmana, Shrutadev, is mentioned after the king, since out of meekness he remained behind the king out of respect. Right? Because the Brahman is superior to the Kshatriya, but there's a special consideration when you're dealing with the king. Because the king protects all the people. Therefore, they're given that special consideration. So then killing a king is basically worse than killing a Brahmin. The killing a Kshatriya is less than killing a Brahmin. Does that make sense? But now if you have some great sage and all that, then now that's bigger than the king, because these sages, they maintain the proper understanding of all these kings. Right? So greater than the king is the emperor. You understand? So that's how it goes. That's why it was considered... what's his name? The Brahmin boy?
Sringi.
So he's just looking at it. He's a Kshatriya, my father's a Brahmin, so therefore he's less. But his father pointed out he may be a Kshatriya, but he's the emperor. Not even just the king, he's the emperor. That means the whole planet is dependent and protected by him. So by killing him, now who's going to protect the whole planet? Because Sringi's not going to do it. Right? So therefore, we have to understand that there is balance. The whole thing is how you personally interact. But at the same time, so between the two of them personally, then the Kshatriya would take the junior position. But at the same time, because of the position of the Kshatriya as the king, then in the formal situation, depending on how it is, then Shrutadeva is taking that. Not that he has to, he doesn't have to. But it's just naturally, being a Brahmin, he's meek at heart. Sugriva Goswami continued, at exactly the same time, King Mithila and Shrutadev each went forward with joined palms and invited the Lord of the Dasarhas to be his guest, along with the Brahmana sages. Wanting to please them both, the Lord accepted both their invitations. Thus he simultaneously went to both homes, and neither could see him entering the other's homes. And we refer to the previous chapter if there's any doubts. Okay? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, understanding that both Shrutadeva and Bahulasva wanted him to come to their houses, he expanded himself and the sages into two forms and entered both houses without the other person seeing it. Just as in Dwarka, he's in each queen's house and each queen doesn't know he's in the other one. She thinks he's only in her palace. So in the same way he expands. Also the sages, so there's two Narads, two Sukadevs, two, you know, Maitreyas, two, like that. So they both go. The king thought, merciful Krishna has accepted my invitation and is in coming to my house, and Shrutadev is going home alone. And Shrutadev thought, Krishna is accepting my invitation and the king is going home alone. Because they both offered, they're both there, they know each other offered. Then they see that Krishna is coming with them. So then naturally they'll think, That he didn't, but he expanded and went with both of them. So they also had developed two forms, one joyful with Krishna and one despondent without Krishna. Right? So then there's two forms there also. So one is, oh, he went with Shrutadeva and he didn't come, so he's feeling that separation. At the same time, he also has the form where he's with Krishna and not feeling that separation. Yes, so it's all happening at once. The neighbors of the king, who is with Krishna, on going to Shrutadeva's house, saw him there alone and despondent without Krishna. Oh, means that, okay. And the assistant of Shrutadeva, who were with Krishna, going to the king's house, saw him there alone, despondent without Krishna. So, not only did he go to each one, but depending upon which party you were with, you saw the other party that Krishna was not there. So therefore, even the associates didn't know. Right? So only Krishna and his associates then were involved. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When King Bahulasva, a descendant of Janaka, saw Lord Krishna approaching his house from a distance with the sages, who were somewhat fatigued from the journey, he immediately arranged to have seats of honor brought out for them. After they were all comfortably seated, the wise king, his heart overflowing with joy and his eyes clouded by tears, bowed down to them and washed their feet with intense devotion. Right? So in other words, the sages, one may say, you know, but you know, from walking, from all these things, because they're absorbed in the Lord, so in that way, but physically, externally, right? Because why does the materialist look enthusiastic? Because he puts that energy into the physical, because that is him. And the sages don't. They just put it into absorbing themselves and thinking of Krishna. So therefore, physically, they may not appear to have much energy. So wouldn't be. And then the king then, appropriate, then brings places for them to sit and everything like that. Taking the wash water, which could purify the entire world, he sprinkled it on his head and the heads of his family members. Then he worshipped all those great lords by offering them fragrant sandalwood paste, flower garlands, fine clothing, ornaments, incense, lamps, argya, cows, and bulls. BBT purport states, Srila Prabhupada comments, Bahulasva, the king of Videha, was very intelligent and was a perfect gentleman. He was astonished that so many great sages, along with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were personally present in his home. He knew perfectly well that conditioned souls engaged in worldly affairs cannot be 100% pure, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotees are always transcendental to worldly contamination. Therefore, when he found that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and all the great sages were at his home, he was astonished and began to thank Lord Krishna for his causeless mercies. The word Ishwara in this verse refers not only to the Supreme Lord, but also to the exalted sages in his company. This is confirmed by Acharya Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti. So that's the... Because it mentions there he worshipped all the lords, because then they're also seen in that exalted position. Right? Because of their association with the Lord. So, because one can't ordinarily see Krishna, he's so thankful that Krishna had come. And not only that, these great sages that are in the same position, they can't be regularly seen. They've also come. So then how much mercy he's, you know, is there, how happy he's feeling. Sukadeva Goswami continued. When they had eaten to their full satisfaction, for their further pleasure, the king began to speak slowly and in a gentle voice as he held Lord Vishnu's feet on his lap and happily massaged them. Sri Bahulasva said, O Almighty Lord, you are the soul of all created beings, their self-illuminating witness, and now you are giving your audience to us, who constantly meditate on your lotus feet. You have said, neither Ananta, Goddess Sri, nor unborn Brahma is dear to me than my unalloyed devotees. Right? Because Ananta, you know, then these are formal positions. Right? Brahma is, you know, his incarnation is as the mode of passion to create. Then Goddess Sri then is the, you know, goddess of opulence. right? And Ananta, then he takes care of all, you know, the expanding facilities and everything like that. So that aspect is not what's attractive about them. What's attractive is the devotees. Now, they're all devotees, so they also attract Krishna because it's their devotion. It's not because Sri has all opulences or Balaram has all that power or Brahma has all, can do all that work. That's not why he's attracted to them. He's attracted because of devotion. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because he has nothing to gain. To prove your own words true, you have now revealed yourself to our eyes. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Ananta as a brother, Lakshmi as a wife, and Brahma as a son are not as dear. But they become most dear to me as pure devotees. Right? So, because they're a brother, wife, or son, that's not why they're dear. It's because they're pure devotees. That's why they're dear. Right? Like you see, Krishna's, wherever he performs his pastime, Balaram's always there. So whatever form is there. So you say Ananta, you say Sesha, whatever, then it means all those forms. So you always see Krishna and Balaram together. He's always with his consort. Right? And in every universe, there's going to be a Brahma. So they're all there, but it's because of their devotion, that's why they're attracted. So, you have said this. To show that these words are true, you have become visible to me, right? Because of his devotion. Because otherwise, being a king and this, that, that's not why he's there. You have been merciful to me as one among your unlimited followers. You show your words are true, since Ananta, Lakshmi, and Brahma have not come with you. But these sages have been brought, right? Because they're great devotees. This is a suitable statement because they have Shanta Ras, like him. According to the Bhava, the Lord makes his appearance. Right, so they all appreciate the Lord. And so therefore, then, they are on that they are then, you could say, always associates of the Lord. Because whether the Lord is present or not, they always feel they're with the Lord because of that appreciation. Right, because it's only, it's like, if you have something and there's no possession, you know, I show you, oh yeah, check this rock, yeah, nice rock and all that, and you hand it back, it's fine. But now if you think this is my rock, and someone picks it up, then immediately, hey. You understand? So, because they're in Shanta, and always in appreciation, there's no possession. They never feel separation. So they're always with the Lord. And it's because of their devotion. So therefore, that's what he's saying. So these others have to come because of position. These sages have come because of that devotion. And like that, then he's revealed himself to them.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura